Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the unprepared voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
How are we?
Unprepared. That's exactly how I am. So busy doing this podcast on such a regular basis that I've forgotten a couple of important things lately.
Quite important.
Yeah, haven't got long.
You've got 5 days, is it, from now?
I think it might be less. Let me check. 4 days.
4 days.
Yeah, until Christmas Day.
All the best.
And I haven't started.
What are you going to do?
Well, do you know what? I don't think I'm going to be the only one. You guys listening in, I want to know who else has not started their Christmas shopping yet. I'm sure that I'm not the only one. The thing that I have in my favour is that with today's world, there are ways in which you can get next day delivery. So I know I've still got about 24 hours, but I do need to complete everything. And I do have a lot of brothers. The brothers have girlfriends and wives. They've got children and other bits and pieces. So I do have quite a lot of presents to buy, unfortunately.
Will everyone just be happy with a pair of signed Richard Lee goalie gloves?
Well, I mean, that or DVDs or books. I mean, I've got all sorts of, do you know, the DVDs, for those that don't know, I made a DVD years ago. And me not knowing the landscape at the time, I thought, oh, goalkeeping DVD, there's millions of goalkeepers across the world. How many do I order? So I remember at the time I ordered 5,000 DVDs to sell. Let's just say there's still 4,700 in my mum's attic. So yeah, maybe DVDs for all.
We should feature that DVD. I need to get a copy of that and we will feature it. We'll go through it frame by frame, scene by scene on this podcast.
Let's do that. Do you know what? It'd be good actually if someone did take a copy. I think my mum would be delighted just to have a little bit more space up there.
Have any of you, do any of our listeners, of the 300 people that bought that DVD of Richard Lee's, probably in the basement bucket of some HMV store somewhere in the world. But if you have one, let us know. I would love to know if one of our listeners has your DVD.
I would love to know as well. Out of those 300, by the way, I had to give away about 250. The number of sales was very, very low, unfortunately.
Well, speaking of listeners, Richard, we released a phone number.
We did.
Last week,
what
didn't we?
A response.
On the podcast.
What a response.
A rousing response. Thank you to those who got in touch. All three of you. Thank you. But hey, that's a start, right?
It's a start. It is
that
a start.
Is a start.
Hopefully, it's a sign of things to come. Because by the way, the voice notes we received were fantastic. We are going to feature them today, and we are going to answer the questions that have been asked. Again, all part of us wanted to make this as interactive as we possibly can. So, a big thank you to those who have made contact, and if you haven't yet but want to, then please do. The number is.
It is 07503673020.
There you go. We still haven't got a jingle.
No. A jingle is in the offing. Okay?
Fantastic.
Just to really, really inspire people to get in touch. But it is a start. We're delighted, to be fair, to have those three. And you said we're going to feature them. We're going to feature them right now, Richard. The first one is from Chris Carr from Joondalup, which is in Western Australia. There seems to be a bit of an Australian theme here. We had the guy on last week, didn't we, asking about, it was Rad Reynolds, wasn't it? Asking about Matty Ryan and Robert Sanchez at Brighton. Here is what Chris Carr had to ask.
Hey guys, you had a guy on last week. He was asking about Matty Ryan and why some of the Brighton fans may be turning him ever so slightly at the moment. Look, to follow on from that about Aussie goalkeepers, it seems there are less goalkeepers from Australia now in the Premier League and the Championship. You know, I can't really think of too many. So if you think back to the days of like the Bosnich and, you know, you had Schwarzer, you also had Brad Jones and a few others, I think. Do you think, you know, maybe there's a reason for it? Would it be the lack of coaching? Would it be, you know, not bringing it up through the grassroots here in Australia? Or do you think it's just the lack of interest in the sport in particular? You know, Australia hasn't produced a decent crop of goalkeepers for that next generation in a while. So is there any reason for it? What's your thoughts on that?
So there you go, Chris Carr from Joondalup in Western Australia. What do you think?
Yeah, look, fantastic question. And I was thinking about this a lot as to where to go with this, because there's a good point made. Certainly, I'd highlight Schwarzer and Bosnich in particular, who were excellent, let's be fair. I know Bosnich got a little bit of stick for his distribution at United, but generally speaking, he was fantastic goalkeeper. I know that Bosnich largely did quite a bit of his youth at United from memory, and then obviously went off here, there and everywhere before returning to United. But what I'd say is, I look back at goalkeepers and where goalkeepers came from. America was a good example as well. We had the likes of Brad Friedel, Casey Keller, Tim Howard, Brad Guzan to an extent. And it seems to shift. And then in recent years, I felt like the Brazilians, obviously Alisson, Ederson in particular, Spanish goalkeepers, you kind of see that it almost goes in waves to an extent. Like the American goalkeeper was a real thing for a period of time where it felt like Americans were seen to produce goalkeepers. I'd argue at the moment, they're not necessarily seen to be doing that. And it's probably similar with Australia, in that Australia for a period of time did have that reputation. In fairness, until recently, I'd say that Matty Ryan's reputation has been very good. And you'd certainly put him in a similar category as Schwartz from Bosnich. Maybe not quite of the same level, of course, but not a million miles away. Now the fact that he's lost his place in the team, and in fairness, Robert Sanchez, it looks like he isn't going to lose his place now anytime soon. Of course, that question is a very valid question. Is it a case of them not necessarily producing goalkeepers? Again, I've got to be careful what I say without knowing what the youth system looks like in Australia and who they have got coming through. I think certainly that what you're finding over here and in Europe is that the goalkeeping departments are very, very good. Now, that's the bit that I'm not sure if Australia have that bit nailed down. The bit that I could always say about America was that they always had a lot of sports, or do have a lot of sports, at hand-eye coordination. So you've got basketball, baseball, American football, where of course you might not necessarily make it as a basketball player, but if you've got that kind of hand-eye coordination, you'll see a lot of basketball players then transition to goalkeeping and have a lot of the natural attributes in order to learn the technique needed to be a good goalkeeper. I don't know if that's the same for Australia. Australian rules, potentially, I could throw out there that will have certain similarities where you're going to have that physical element. You're going to be obviously catching the ball quite regularly and certainly with a lot of pressure. So there's certain things, I'm sure, from that sport that could translate. But that's the bit I don't know. And again, if you guys do know this, I'd love to know what it looks like in terms of the landscape for Australian goalkeepers. Are there a lot of good centres, goalkeeping centres for kids there? Is there a pathway in which they can make it to a professional outfit at a reasonable age in order for them to kick on in such a way and maybe at some point find their way over to the Premier League?
He did mention Brad Jones there as well, didn't he? Saudi Arabia, Brad Jones is now playing, and he's 38 years old, so coming to the end of his career. Dani Vukovic is now at Genk, also in his 30s. So, or Vukovic, depending on how you want to pronounce that. So you've got those two goalkeepers. It seems like there aren't actually, it's a good point that Chris Carr makes, there aren't that many younger goalkeepers coming through the ranks. I had a quick look at Australian goalkeepers who have played in the top flight. How many can you mention?
Well, go on. We've named a few there. So I've got, what, four or five?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, so the ones you just touched on there, the three that were mentioned, plus Matty Ryan. And now you put me on the spot here, so I can't think of anything past those four at the moment.
Yeah, there's a list. Some of them I don't know, never heard of. Adam Federici, of course. John Phelan. Yeah, Mark Bosnich, you mentioned. Brad Jones. Jason Kearton, remember him from the early days at Everton, yeah. Steve Maltone.
Maltone? I don't know him.
Never heard of him. Andy Pettersson.
Yeah, remember him.
Matty Ryan, and obviously Mark Schwarzer.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Pettersson, of course, was at Charlton, wasn't he, for a period of time. Yeah, look, it is fascinating. And that's the bit where I know now, the way that football's gone, it's very much about having the centres of excellence when they're at a younger age, where they're getting the quality goalkeeper training and they're picking up the techniques from a younger age, and then having team environments where they're able to take that skill set to another level. Certainly in England, there are so many places now that offer that pathway. And if you are a young goalkeeper with potential, with the attributes, or potentially going to have the attributes, and you have the right attitude and application, then of course there's a huge chance you can maximise your potential and become a very, very good goalkeeper. That's the bit that I don't know if Australia have at the moment. And again, you guys might know that better than me.
Yep. Thank you, Chris, for that one. We'll do the other one because we got three. One of them was a rate my save.
Yep.
So we're going to go all out and get rid of them all today, bar the rate my save. We'll do that on Thursday, perhaps. The next one is from Paul Roberts from St. Albans. He's asking about Arsenal and the situation with Bernd Leno.
Hi, guys. Just want to say, absolutely love the show. Regular listener now for quite some time, and really enjoy your insights into goalkeeping. I like the measured approach that you have, and you know, a good balance between the positives and the negatives. Just a quick question for you. I was wondering what your thoughts are. Did Arsenal make a massive mistake in letting Emi Martinez go? I mean, for me, he seems to be one of the best goalies in the Premier League this season. Don't get me wrong, I think Leno's a great goalie, but you know, was it the right thing letting Martinez go, considering how good he has been this season? I know obviously the flip side is they got some decent money for him, but just wondering what your thoughts are.
Yeah, great question and a fascinating situation for me in that for me, it was very simple. Once Martinez had come in and done what he did, in fact, firstly, I should just mention, thank you for the lovely comments. If you make a lovely comment, you are more likely to be played than not. So good work there, Paul. Look, fascinating situation for me. The moment that Martinez came in last season and did what he did, fantastic, but he created a problem because the moment he did that, he was never going to be a number two again. So Arsenal had a decision. They had the two number ones. And for me, they did the right thing in that they had to move one of them on. And it was either going to be Martinez or Leno. I think the fact that Villa was so strong on Martinez and offered the money that they did, that made their mind up for them. And hence the decision was made. The other example that I can give that's similar to that at the moment that I don't think is working as planned is Henderson and De Gea. You know, where you've effectively got the two number ones who seemingly aren't overly happy at the situation. So I think that Arsenal did the right thing. The big question is, did they sell the right player? That's the question. And of course, when you see how the two teams are faring and certainly see how well Martinez is doing, it's not surprising that you'll get a few Arsenal fans asking whether they sold the right goalkeeper. That being said, I agree. I think Leno's very good. I don't think Leno's the reason that they're struggling in the way they are this season. But of course, that's going to be one of the decisions that's magnified when you're looking at Arteta's performance. And was that the right call, given that Martinez is now in a team, a top team, that if they win their game in hand, I think they'll be top three. So of course, you know, people are going to ask that question.
Okay, nice one. Thank you for that, Paul Roberts. St Albans, that's just down the road from
just
you.
Down the road, very nice. Lovely restaurants there.
Is that not your mate or something? but thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. If you would like to get in touch, 07503673020 at GK Union on Twitter, of course. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. Before we get on with the show, Richard, you have the patron of the week.
I do. And this week it is Derek Moore. You were just about to do a drum roll, weren't you? Sorry. Yeah, Derek Moore, our patron of the week. Again, massive thank you to all our patrons. You have effectively allowed us to buy a mobile phone, which we are now taking these voice notes on. So a huge thank you for that. We are about to release something very soon. Keep an eye out for this. Where it's going to be more of a goalkeeper consultancy. We do have 10 plus years in the field of helping goalkeeper coaches build goalkeeping schools. And certainly with a lot of the different strands we have available to us here, we are looking to work with specific people. So again, if that is something of interest, by all means do make contact. We can give you more information, but we will be giving more information in due course.
We will indeed. There is also a new interview out on Patreon with Mark Crosley, none other than Big Norm. Now, with this particular interview, we were aware he'd done many over the course of the past few months. There's a couple of great interviews he's done with Under the Cosh recently, where he really just goes into detail about stories. Brian Clough, Nottingham Forest, Fulham, Middlesbrough, whoever it may be, tells some great stories in those particular podcasts and, you know, pulls no punches. So we took a slightly different tack with ours, didn't we? We made it more about goalkeeping, which we obviously would do. And there's a really good moment in it where he talks about the effectiveness, the importance and the simplicity, really, of communication. Here's a little snippet for you now.
One thing that sticks out in my mind, I played with Andy Melville and we used to talk a lot off the pitch. And we were playing QPR one day and we talked on the Thursday and the Friday saying, right, we're playing against... I can't remember who it was, but he likes to put him from the left, but he's right-footed. He loves to come in and he loves to curl that one. But as a goalkeeper, when they're coming in from the left or on the right, you don't want to get done with that one backing at your near post. That's the one we don't like. The bender around you, we can make a camera save or whatever, but the one that gets cut and goes through the legs. So I thought, how can we stop that? So Andy Melville said, right, let's replay the situation. So we'd do it on the training ground and go, and we'd get one of the young lads to like cut inside with the ball, cut inside, and Melv would take up a false position. And he'd say, I'm just going to make sure that he doesn't hit the ball through my legs back at your near. You take care of the rest. And it happened against QPR, and I made the save, but it came straight in the midriff. I walked right up to the edge of the penalty area, high-fived Melv, and the only me and him knew why we were doing it. Why has he just high-fived in there? He's just hit it straight into his... Because what Melv has prevented, he's prevented the one through the legs back at your near stick, and I've exaggerated my position probably one step left to what I'd normally be, which made it a midriff save. So the only me and Melv, because we'd spoke on the Thursday and the Friday and replayed the situation, actually invented the situation before it happened, knowing... with the technology that we had, that we can do that, and that can be our communication. So my communication to Mel then was, stop the one to the near, stop the one to the near. We should just remind him to stop the one to going through his legs to the near. I'll take it, and that's telling him a few things. It's telling him I'm taking care of the bender. You're not dangling a leg to let it come back through your legs. You're keeping your feet really, really close together. And then when it happens, it's a great feeling. So they're the little bits of communication, what we're talking about, which is the fine line communication rather than the squeeze out, get out, you know, that's there's more to communication than just speaking for the sake of it.
Yeah, that was Mark Crossley. Really good chat that is now available on Patreon for all tiers, for tier Shilton, tier Seaman and tier Banks. Get yourself over to patreon.com/goalkeepersunion.
Yeah, we have three tiers. We're not going to be introducing a tier four.
Oh, there he goes. Not even rehearsed.
There you go. You see what I did there?
I see what you did there.
My job is done.
Without further ado, on with the show.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Starting the roundup this week, Richard, with keeper capers. Something slightly different.
Unusual for us. We're kind of turning things on its head today.
It's all over the hockey. Craig Gordon was also all over the hockey after conceding a penalty from Oddson Edouard in the Scottish Cup final. Celtic narrowly beating Hibs. Eventually, on penalties, they did go two up, however, and the second goal was a Panenka penalty from Edouard, which Craig Gordon did not take kindly to.
He didn't. The ball hit the net. He's run into the net, grabbed the ball and tried to throw the ball. And then he continued to discuss this with them. Now, this was fascinating for me for many reasons. I think we'll go to the tweets first or touch on the tone of the tweets, because I know that we put something out just to see what the general consensus was. And I was kind of surprised to an extent as to what the general consensus was. And I'm going to give my point of view very shortly. But Matt, what was the general tone of the tweets?
Anger, really. Yeah. Just anger.
So the question that you asked was?
We just put it out there and said, is it understandable that Craig Gordon reacted in the way that he did? It was a question. Mm-hmm. It was slightly sarcastic and it was supposed to be a little bit funny, but it was met with quite a lot of anger. I think primarily from Celtic fans, really just saying, absolutely not. It's a joke. He shouldn't get upset, which in a way I actually agree with. I don't really think that his reaction was justified. He got beaten by a sublime bit of skill from an attacker who's chosen to do that on one of the greatest stages of Scottish football. That takes a lot of nerve, brilliant skill, great goals. So really, you've just got to suck it up.
Yeah, okay, I'll give a different perspective. Now, you goalkeepers listening in, what do you do when someone tries to lob you? At any point, when suddenly they'll be through a shot from 20 yards and suddenly they try and chip you, and the ball just lands comfortably in your hands. What do you normally do? Normally, you'll then boot the ball as far away as you possibly can, and you'll tell them to go and get it because it's disrespectful. Now, for me, this was the ultimate disrespect. To a goalkeeper that's been there for as long as he has, I understand why he got annoyed. Now, whether that's right or wrong, and I appreciate at the end of the day, the attacking player has done exactly what he needed to do in order to score a goal. And that is absolutely fine. The other side to this is that Craig Gordon was, of course, at Celtic for many years, won many titles, I believe is highly regarded there and had a very successful time there. So in his eyes, all he can think of, you've made me look like an idiot. And that's actually the general tone of the tweets we're getting, is that made him look like an idiot, yada, yada, yada. Well, isn't that the point? I guess from a personal point of view, a club that you were maybe not quite a legend, but certainly you were very, very highly regarded, won many trophies with, very well thought of, and then you feel like you've been disrespected. That's essentially what's happened here. That's essentially why Craig Gordon is as annoyed as he is. Right or wrong? Well, again, that's up for people to perceive in however they wish to do it. Me personally, would I have been annoyed if I'd have gone back and played against Watford in a big cup game, and which is probably the equivalent? You know, my relationship with Watford certainly didn't win anything near what Craig Gordon won with Celtic. We did win a FA Reserve trophy once. In fact, the Hart Senior Cup, we won that as well. And the Ibiza Cup, I need to talk to you about that one day. We won that too. So I think my list of medals for Watford isn't quite the same as Craig Gordon's. But do you know what? I would have felt slightly disrespected if one of my ex-teammates, i.e. someone like a Tom Cleverley, steps up to take a penalty and decides to do that. I would have felt a bit like, come on, Tom, like we were teammates for however long. Did you really feel the need to do that to me? There's many ways in which you could score a penalty. That is deemed by goalkeepers the most disrespectful. But so what I'm saying is I do understand Craig Gordon's point of view.
But what responsibility does Oddson Edouard, and in your case, would Tom Cleverley have to consider your emotions at that time? No. It's a Scottish Cup final. You want to win the game. He scored a goal. If Celtic fans, if he plays that to Craig Gordon's right, which is the way that Craig Gordon dived, which maybe is what he was used to, having studied Edouard in training for many years at Celtic. And he saves that and he goes, yeah, well, I was going to do a Panenka, but I thought it was a bit disrespectful to Craig Gordon. Celtic fans are like, oh, right, okay, cheers. Mm. So you'd rather spare his blushes than score a goal for our team to win the Scottish Cup final.
I get it. And I'm not saying that what he did was wrong necessarily, because it's ended up in the goal and they've ended up winning the game eventually on penalties, ironically. But so I'm not saying what he did was wrong. All I'm saying is I understand Craig Gordon's point of view. And I understand in that moment, when he looks back at it now and you look at it logically, the guy's done what he's done and he scored a goal. So when you look at it logically, it's absolutely fine. But Craig Gordon, playing against his old club, I'm sure he got a nice round of applause at the start of the game, etc., etc. And then to have one of the players that he played with do that, I understand why Craig Gordon saw red in that moment. That's all I'm saying. Whether it's right or wrong, again, it's up to the perception of people individually. Personally, as a goalkeeper, if I'd have felt like one of my ex-teammates did that to me, I would have felt a little bit hard done by. But at the same time, when the red mist had cleared, I would have understood why that player did that in order to get the outcome which they got, which was a goal and in the end, another victory.
Yeah, Neil McCann, the former Rangers player and now pundit. Maybe it's an ex-footballer thing. He agrees with you. He said it was selfish and he didn't like it, thought it was pretty disrespect.
Yeah, and actually, I think that's it. Do you know what? It's almost like a film. If you were going to write a Hollywood film, and there's so many sports films that are out there, and often it will come down to moments like this. You've got a way in which you can win. You can win in a way in which you do it with dignity and with integrity, or you can do it a bit of a sneaky way. Now, again, people are going to listen to this and say, well, no, it's a Panenka, it's a great bit of skill, etc., etc. But the fact that you're disrespecting an ex-teammate in the way that you are, personally, I don't see massively kindly to it. Again, don't think there's anything massively wrong with it, because he's doing what he's doing in order to score a goal. But I think there's many different ways in which you can win a football match. And for me, knowingly doing this and mocking the goalkeeper to an extent, I would have been disappointed too.
They did go on to win the game. Celtic, Craig Gordon saved a penalty in the shootout, but Connor Hazard, his opposite number and former protege to an extent, not really a protege, but someone who he helped develop as a goalkeeper at Celtic, and something that Paddy Bonner, the former Celtic and Irish goalkeeper, alluded to on Twitter with a lovely picture of Craig Gordon. Not, it's lovely to see Craig Gordon down and out by his post, but lovely to see Connor Hazard go up to Craig Gordon and, you know, comfort him essentially after the game. But Connor Hazard, let's talk about him. Two penalty saves in that shootout. That's the quadruple treble for Celtic. They hadn't won in five before Hazard came in. He'd been farmed out on loan over the past few years. Just his third appearance. He played against Lille in the Europa League, which they won. He played against Kilmarnock, and then he was kept in for the Scottish Cup final. What a start to his career as a Celtic goalkeeper.
I mean, yeah, it's been a whirlwind start, it's fair to say. This is huge, though. The fact they win this game, of course, that you would think would save Neil Lennon's job for a period of time. He's obviously under intense pressure. And to step into the games like he has does take an incredible mentality. It will be really interesting to see what happens with Celtic goalkeepers, him included, because I know they haven't necessarily settled for one this season. There's all sorts of stories in the press as to what they might do. And of course, they're stepping in for the shoes of Fraser Forster, who was so good last season. You do wonder whether that might be the match again come January. Again, I'm just speculating here, but it will be very, very interesting. But certainly from Conor Hazard's point of view, an incredible day to have not been involved at all, really, in the first team, and suddenly three games on the bounce like that, to play in a cup final in the way that he did. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that dreams are made of.
Okay, Richard, let's whiz through the Premier League action for the first time in a long time. Not that many talking points regarding goalkeeping, which is both a good thing and a bad thing for us, I suppose.
Ordinarily a good thing for goalkeepers, but for our show, indeed, we normally have something quite meaty to get into, hence why we've mixed things up a little bit this week.
Absolutely. Let's go to St Mary's first. Southampton 0, Manchester City 1. Just the one goal to talk about, but a goal that was largely down to the Route 1 approach from Edison. They can play all the football they like, Man City, but just give it to the big Brazilian and let him punt it down the field.
What I would say about this, and certainly for you goalkeepers listening in, you'll appreciate this, is that I think it's so important you do mix things up from time to time. Here's a great example. I think when you look to play too much and you look to play to your fullback, centre half, sitting midfielder, clipping to wingers, etc., if you're too condensed, at times you will be pressurised. They will put their forwards onto your defenders and they'll close in. The spaces become fewer and fewer. So I think every now and then, just to go long, just spread things out. This was a great example where Edison's fired it long, and it's an incredible strike from inside his own 6-yard box. Trajectory's fantastic and it's gone a good 80 yards without any real direction. It's very central. But of course, when the ball then breaks to City in the attacking third and they've got a situation situation where they've got quite a few attacking players up there, then of course you've bypassed potentially 15 passes in order to get to that position in the first place, and then thereafter they're ruthless, and it's a good finish from Sterling, no chance McCarthy. But it does just show there is still a place for this in the modern game.
Spurs 0, Leicester 2. Kasper Schmeichel bouncing back from his semi sort of error against Everton in the week. A good save from Heung-min Son.
Yes, indeed. I mean, we said it in the last show that one of the biggest strengths for me that Kasper Schmeichel has is the ability to bounce back seemingly instantly. You know, he's, for me, still underrated. I know I say this way too often, but I just feel like he doesn't necessarily get the plaudits he deserved. Maybe because it's not, if he was English, maybe he would get a hell of a lot more attention. But I just think he's so solid in everything that he does. His game's excellent, you know, and it has been now for several years. Mistakes are minimal and he does make big saves. And this, by the way, I thought he made look reasonably easy, because this wasn't an easy save. Moving across to his right, the strike wasn't quite with the velocity that Son would have wanted. But for him to get back on himself, not only get the hand to it, but again, it's the awareness and the ability to purposefully palm the ball into a certain area. There's not many areas here he could have done that would have been safe, but he was able to expertly direct it wide of the post. And it's a very, very good save.
Is it arguably then, because the co-commentator, I think it was Alan Smith, said that Son didn't catch it properly, it came off his toe, but it was still a top save. Does that, a bit like Alex Smithies last week when we spoke about the goal he conceded from Jamal Lowe, does it arguably make it a better save from Kasper Schmeichel because Son didn't get the connection that Kasper Schmeichel was initially anticipating?
I'd say yes. There was a good example in the Championship, actually, the second goal that Ben Foster conceded, which was an own goal, where there was a slight similarity in that if something unexpected happens, of course, your brain reacts to what you think will happen. Now, naturally, when the ball's coming to the far post to Son, you're expecting a firm contact and you're preparing for that. There was another good example, actually, Jordan Pickford in the Cup a few weeks ago now, but it was like an overhead kick of sorts for you guys that can remember it, where he's sort of set himself expecting a really firm shot. Suddenly it's not a firm shot, but because he's already set himself in such a way, he wasn't able to keep it out, wasn't able to react appropriately. Similarly, Ben Foster wasn't able to react appropriately to the own goal this weekend. But this one for me, the way in which Kasper Schmeichel keeps his eye on the ball, the movement and the agility is fantastic, first and foremost. Gets across his goal, positionally very good. The agility to get back to himself on his left, the firm left hand, and the awareness to palm it into the area. There's so many different parts to this save that won't necessarily be noticed or appreciated. That for me, it was an accumulation of all these different things that made it so impressive.
Okay, good stuff. I'm presuming you're saying all this because he's now your mate, apparently, Kasper.
I mean, look, to say he's my mate, I think that's probably a bit far. But yeah, you're right. Just, I know you noticed that he did just start following me on Instagram. And of course, he follows me on Twitter already. So I guess we'd probably say we're best friends now.
Okay, well, the onus is on you to get him on a Goalkeepers Union podcast then, Richard.
Yeah, I have asked him several times. He's ignored me every time. So, but Kasper, if you are listening, we would love to get you on a podcast soon.
Good stuff. Over to Old Trafford. Manchester United 6, Leeds 2. A funny old game, this one. Ilan Meslier conceding 6, but not having the worst game in the world, really. Potentially could have done better with the 5th from Daniel James, but you've seen something in this.
Yeah, I don't think he could. I mean, again, we talk a lot about the different styles of goalkeeping and how goalkeepers tend to set from a shot like this. And we're talking, what, 12 yards out. We actually paused it at the point of impact when Daniel James strikes the ball. And I really like the position that Meslier finds himself in. You know, his set stance is, I consider, a very powerful one. Hands slightly below the knees. Legs shoulder width apart, give or take. You know, not particularly low, not particularly high. But I looked and thought, well, if it goes in near post, I think he's got it covered. If it goes in far post, I think he's got it covered. He's taken a true position, it's fair to say. The one area of weakness is through the legs. Because in the way he's set, there's no way in which he can get his knee down or close his legs in that speed of time. So I look at it and I genuinely think for all the places that Daniel James could have put this, he put it in the one place that Meslier couldn't get to. Again, never looks great when it goes through your legs, of course. But I do think that for goalkeepers that have a similar style to him, I think that's going to be your biggest area of weakness when you're setting for a shot. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if other teams saw this particular goal and saw the fact that it has gone through his legs, the way in which he sets.
Sorry to interrupt, but to be fair, that is what we saw, wasn't it, with Callum Wilson, Newcastle, when they played Palace. He said that he had identified Vicente Guaita potentially not being great at the ball going underneath his legs.
Yeah, no, it's true. Now, the problem with this is that I wouldn't necessarily change anything about the way in which Melier sets. I think he looks so strong at point of impact. Again, balanced, has everything covered. So personally, my advice to him would be to continue doing what he's doing. He's going to make far more saves with his technique than he is going to concede goals. But of course, there are different decisions you can make here. You know, we spoke a lot about Ederson rushing out and spreading. Now, had he done that in this situation, he might have saved it. But it was largely agreed that that wasn't the right technique in a situation like this. Similarly, he might drop a little bit more and give himself slightly more reaction time. But again, of course, by doing that, he's then going to leave the corners exposed. So for me, very little wrong with this. It's just one of them. I think this was the one area that he was going to get beaten if he got beaten, which he would have got beaten. And unfortunately for him, that's exactly where the shot went.
David De Gea made a good save from Rafinha. It's very much a case of the hokey-cokey with goalkeepers, isn't it? At Old Trafford at the moment, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer going with De Gea, then going with Henderson, then going back with De Gea, but made a really good save from that Rafinha volley.
He did. This was a very David De Gea-esque save, I would say. Interestingly, we looked at it this morning. We went back over the highlights to watch it again, and it wasn't on the Sky Sports highlights, which I found interesting. I would have thought this would have been one of the highlights because it was a brilliant save, but maybe this feeds into the narrative that we've been talking about, that these great David De Gea saves aren't necessarily being appreciated in the way in which they used to be appreciated. But make no bones about it, this was a fantastic save. It's so close in. The reaction is phenomenal to get two firm hands. I don't think he had much control over the direction, but the fact that it ends up just landing wide of the post or pretty much on the post in the way that it did, brilliant, brilliant save.
Over to the Amex, where fans were allowed in, of course, and they were there to celebrate. Quite the stop from Robert Sanchez, still in goal for Brighton instead of Matty Ryan. We actually had a message from Adrian Kajumba, the brilliant sports reporter for the Daily Mail, and he said that we had to include this as one of the saves of the weekend. Robert Sanchez, his save from David McGoldrick, a free kick that was down low to his right, and I think the reaction of the players, of the fans, and particularly David McGoldrick with this one, just showed how good a save it was.
Indeed. I'm going to correct you because it was down low to his left.
Did I say right? Mm. Oh.
But don't worry.
Really?
It's okay. Everything else was correct. No, what I would say is, ordinarily, I'd say a free kick on your side, you are expected to save. Or you'd hold your hands up if you conceded. Now, this is different. And the reason it's different is that the taker pushes it a yard, it's then stopped. The moment that happens, of course, a goalkeeper needs to change his position. So this, for me, changes the whole situation because, of course, the moment that it stopped, you've then had to take a step to your right. If you imagine now you're the goalkeeper, you're having to take a step to your right to readjust to the new position of the ball, and suddenly the space to your left is now that much bigger. This is where ordinarily you're reliant on a charger to then cover that side of the goal, which hasn't happened here, and it was perfectly executed. What a free kick. It is going in the bottom corner. Ordinarily, this beats a goalkeeper. The question for me is how many goalkeepers in the Premier League then make this save? Truthfully, very few, because I think this is where the fact that Robert Sanchez is the size that he is, has the athleticism that he has, the power that he has to get himself down, and technically it's an excellent save to get down with such speed and power into the bottom left-hand corner, a firm hand round the post, and the way in which he springs up, you can see he's pleased with himself. And certainly for a young goalkeeper coming in, only his third game, to make a save like that as early into his Brighton career as he has, that will give him a lot of confidence, I'm sure, and a really, really nice moment for him.
And to finish, just worth mentioning some brave goalkeeping from Aaron Ramsdale later in that day, diving at the feet of Aaron Connolly and Alireza Yahanbakhsh.
Yeah, really pleased for Aaron in this game. It was a shame for them in that they couldn't hold on to the victory because that could have been huge for confidence. You know, the fact that you've got a point, it's a very good point to go there, but of course does little for them where they are at the moment. But certainly given that Aaron Ramsdale had a couple of things to say after the game against Man United, and we obviously touched on the goals conceded in that one. So I knew this would be quite a big game for him to show whether he could bounce back. But again, he's shown that he is resilient. It's one of the big things about Aaron Ramsdale that I'm sure we'll see in years to come is that he does have a very, very strong mentality. The fact that he's stepping out there game after game after game, things aren't going well for the team. He's getting a lot of stick, whether that's fair or not. In my opinion, it's not fair, but he is still stepping out there. And actually, he looked very good in this one. He's made several good stops without making anything that you'd say was outstanding. Again, lots of solid saves. He still looks like he's mentally where he needs to be in order to play his best football. And look, maybe this will be a springboard for them.
Richard Lee, it is time.
Oh, Oh, yes, it is. It is the Championship rundown for this weekend. We start on the Friday night at Deepdale. Preston with a 1-0 win over Bristol City and a very, very good performance from Declan Rudd. Two excellent saves in the game itself. One to his right hand side, showing great athleticism and positional awareness in order to tip a ball away from a fierce drive, and then making a great save with his top hand. A vital save, as it turned out. And actually, one of the most impressive things for me, the last kick of the game, a ball whipped in under the crossbar, a goalkeeper's nightmare at times. 1-0 up, last minute of the game, you know the pressure's on, and it is whipped under the crossbar, and with the player on his toes, he just jumps up and plucks the ball above his head, and that was game over. A great save from Daniel Bentley as well in this one. The score at 1-0, save down to his left towards the end of the game. Brilliant save, 1-1, in order to get himself down and get fingertips around the post. Moving on to Saturday, and it was another win for Norwich in their game against Cardiff. A clean sheet for Michael McGovern, and a good save to his right from a Morrison header. Got himself across the goal very quickly before springing to his right to tip the ball round the post. Birmingham losing 4-1 to Middlesbrough. It's fair to say this wasn't a particularly good day for Neil Etheridge. We'll be touching on his performance in a little bit more detail shortly. Yet another win for Marcus Bettinelli. Only one goal conceded. Again, this season, their defensive record is something to be admired. Brentford with a good win over Reading. 3-1. A moment to forget for Raphael. A shot from distance, which he was caught between a cup and a W save for me. And it was one that in the end squirmed through his legs as it dipped and went over the line, unfortunately for him. Huddersfield beating Watford 2-0. A mistake from Ben Foster in this one. Very similar to that of Dean Henderson in the game against Sheffield United a few days ago, where he had the ball at his feet, waited a little bit too long, and by the time he tried to play it, he was closed down. Huddersfield did score and did go on to win the game 2-0. A clean sheet for both James Shea and Asmir Begovic. Once again, good saves in this one. Asmir Begovic having a fantastic season, it's fair to say. Sheffield Wednesday 1, Coventry 0. Kieran Westwood back in goal for this one and had some plaudits from his manager for his performance here. Stoke 1, Blackburn 0. That's now 6 clean sheets in 9 for young Joe Bursic. Made a great save as well from Armstrong in this one. Blackburn, of course, who have been prolific before this, but Stoke defensively very, very good this season. Swansea 2, Barnsley 0. Jack Walton with a yellow card in this one. He did clean out Jan Danda. It's fair to say that the Swansea manager wasn't overly happy with the fact that it was just a yellow. In my opinion, it was the correct decision. And finally, in the Championship, it was Wickham 1, QPR 1. I actually had a good friend who was at this game and said it was a deflection on Wickham's equaliser. My first instinct made me think that maybe Senny Dieng might have done a little bit better. But look, it's fair to say he's had a fantastic season so far. So if it is an error, then I'm sure there won't be too many people asking questions. And that does round up our Championship rundown, our last Championship rundown before Christmas.
Good stuff, Richard. We'll pick out a few of those. The first one, Ben Foster.
Yeah, like I said, it was similar to the Dean Henderson one. And we're seeing so many goals like this now with teams that are looking to play out from the back. Ball's come back to him. He's taken a touch. He's looking for an option, and an option just isn't there. And in fairness to Ben, I think he does realise that it got to the point where it was dangerous. And he does try to clear it, but he is a split second too late and effectively clears it into the attacking player, tries to make amends for it, but can't. But we are just seeing so many goals like this now where goalkeepers are taking such huge risks in order to try and play out in the way they do.
Neil Etheridge, you mentioned as well, it was the handling from the cross, wasn't it, for the third Middlesbrough goal. I noticed that his defender, Mark Roberts, actually gave him a little fist bump after he'd done it to give him a little G up. But the Lewis Wing fourth goal for Middlesbrough as well was one where you saw as soon as it kind of ricocheted up into the roof of the net, he leapt up, Neil Etheridge, did that thing like Dean Henderson did in the week. Whenever you make a mistake, go and grab your water bottle, go and grab your Lucozade bottle. Yeah. Neil Etheridge leapt up after that one. And I think for him here, it would have hurt because Neil Warnock, being his former boss at Cardiff, of course, now the Middlesbrough boss, would have wanted to have impressed him.
He would. And look, I'm not going to dwell too much on this because I think it's fair to say, and I think every Birmingham fan will agree with me on this, that he has been excellent this season. I'll touch on the third goal that you mentioned, the cross that came in. It is a very, very difficult ball to deal with. But when the ball's whipped in like that under the crossbar from a cross, and from what I can see, it looked like it was a greasy day. I think it was a bit wet. Then, of course, it does take very good handling skills to field a ball that's coming in at pace with whip on it under the crossbar. It's not an easy skill to do. Now, I know everyone will argue, well, if you're a Championship goalkeeper, you should be able to do that. Yes, you should. And this is very unusual for him. In terms of other options he has here, potentially you could look to tip it over the bar, but then, of course, everyone will ask you, well, why don't you just catch it? You could potentially punch it, but again, you're unchallenged, so everyone's going to ask, well, why don't you just catch it? But I promise you, there's a lot of goalkeepers that would have done either of those, because this was a difficult ball to deal with. I think Neil Etheridge does the right thing.
Was it a difficult ball to deal with?
It was just a cross that floated in. Okay, goalkeepers understand this. Imagine you're playing on a wet day and your gloves are probably a little bit sodden. Maybe the grip isn't quite what they were at the start of the game, because that's what's happened. And the ball's whipped in under the crossbar with a decent amount of pace. It's not an easy thing to do to catch that football. And again, I think he would expect himself to catch it. And ordinarily, 9 times out of 10, he does. But what I'm saying is, although the mistake does look really bad, it's not as bad as it looks. And I'm not defending him here in that, yes, it is an error. He knows it's an error. And of course, I'm sure everybody watching it says that. But I know that every goalkeeper listening in, they'll appreciate what I'm saying here, that when the ball is whipped in like that, it's not the easiest thing to handle.
Okay, that is fair enough. Not having a go, just wanting to ask the question, of course, to get the informed answer, Richard, that you provided. Just to finish on Kieran Westwood as well. First Saturday 3 p.m. home win in over a year for Sheffield Wednesday. After the game, Tony Pulis, do you want to hear his comments?
Go on.
He's been a good voice in the changing room. He can be a bit off the wall at times, but goalkeepers are. I don't think I've ever met a sensible, level-headed goalkeeper.
Well, there you go. Thanks, Tony. Okay, I've had my fun. Now it's time for you to give us the best of the rest.
Thank you, Richard. It is the best of the rest in the EFL. Jamie Jones made a big save to deny Paddy Madden and earn Wigan a point at Fleetwood. They just equalised as well. He'd conceded 5 in the week at home to Rochdale, had Jamie Jones. So a good bounce back from the former Stevenage stopper. Tom Lawler, who we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, with a penalty save from Padraig Amond at Rodney Parade. Oldham beating Newport County, the league leaders, of course. Amon took the penalty as opposed to Josh Sheehan, the regular penalty taker. So possibly an even better save from Lawler. It was 2-2 at the time. Oldham went on to win the game 4-2. Solid performances from both Luke McGee and Paul Farman as two informed teams, Forest Green and Carlisle, met at the treacherous New Lawn. Did you see it? It was absolutely teeming
down. Heaving it down.
fair to say McGee, I think, just edged it with a close range stop, first from Jimmy Chore and then a Ramsdale. I'm going to call it a Ramsdale-style spread now, because he's really starting to make that his own, I think, Aaron Ramsdale. He denied Joe Riley. They clinched a late winner as well, Forest Green, but a good couple of saves from Luke McGee.
Yeah, they really were. No, they were. And they're important. Again, we touch on this so often. When you make those big saves, often it's then dependent on the result as to whether they get remembered or not. The fact that they've got the victory in the way that they have, of course, they then become even more important. But yeah, two excellent saves.
Managerless Bradford were without a win in 9 prior to the arrival of Cambridge, but a reaction Richard O'Donnell save right at the death kept Joe Ironside at bay. He nearly bagged an assist earlier in that game too, but a big save and a big win for Bradford. Dean Gherkin with a lovely bit of Jekyll and Hyde goalkeeping against Morecambe. He first fumbled a relatively tame Aaron Wilson effort, but made up for it with a great gather to thwart Carlos Mendes Gomez.
It was a brilliant recovery. The first one was a little bit awkward. It's one of those horrible ones just bobbling towards you. And rather than going down to scoop, he's kind of gone with the flat hands, effectively, where flat hands down by your feet, where he's trying to stun the ball to an extent. But of course, it pops off him. And the moment it pops off him, it looks like for all the world that they're going to score. But his recovery is superb. Big dive, gets a hand to it. I think it then hits the post. I don't know the exact sequence, but it is a fantastic save. And in the end, although it wasn't great in the first instance, he certainly made up for it in the second.
And lastly, Leyton Orient may have eventually lost at home to Morecambe, but we can still highlight a save, can't we? That's what this is all about. You don't have to just talk about the saves when a team wins.
Well, we didn't know if it was a save, did we? So we did our homework.
We did. It was almost an unseen fingertip, wasn't it? Tom Nicholls with the effort for Morecambe outside of the box.
It was indeed. You got very excited. Like, we do message each other a lot during games, and you sent me a message along the lines of, I think I've seen a save, but I'm not sure. I don't know. What do you think? And we're like looking at this footage over and over and we couldn't tell. So we went a step further.
We did. Can I just clarify? I wasn't like a school kid, as you just seemed to
exactly
put it
like
there.
A school child.
So yes, we do have this week's text talk, because it was Lawrence Vigouroux with the save. And here he is to explain just how he did it.
Thought it was a decent save, to be fair. Literally just tipped it onto the bar. Like, I think for a second, you know, like, I set, and then I thought I might have been too far over covering the near side, the near post, and luckily, yeah, I went with the top hand and luckily got a little touch on it to just put it on the bar. But I know it was a really tough, like, you're in like two minds, I think, you know, when a striker is out wide, because you think maybe you should be more inside, to cover your near post, which is like, I think I take a little step and then luckily was able to just get the top hand there just to divert onto the bar. So, yeah.
I absolutely love that. What a man, Lawrence Vigouroux.
Indeed. And I'm really pleased for him, actually, that he's found his feet again at Leighton Orient. Of course, he rose to fame at Swindon and there was £1 million price tag put on his head when he was at Swindon because he had a really, really solid season and then lost his way a little bit, it's fair to say, and not necessarily his own doing. But now that he's back at Leighton Orient, playing very, very well from what I can see. So, no, I'm delighted to see it. Clean Sheet Club. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, it is the Clean Sheet Club, and here are the latest entries. We had Alisson with his first since returning to the side. Edison, 4 in 5 for him. Kasper Schmeichel, 2 in 3. Emi Martinez, 7 for the season. Villa have already equaled their tally for the entirety of the last campaign. Into the Championship, Declan Rudd, 5th of the season for him. Michael McGovern, first since stepping in for Tim Krul. Ryan Schofield, 3rd in 4. Asmir Begovic, 5 on the bounce. James Shea, 3 in 4. Kieran Westwood, first of the season for him, conceded just 2. In 3 games. Joe Bursic already mentioned his stats. 6 in 9, of course, for him. Freddie Woodman, normal service resumed there. We move into League One. Craig McGivalray, 4 on the trot, creeping up that table. Nathan Baxter, 2 in a row since stepping in for Toby Savin. Chris Maxwell, 4 in 5. Alex Palmer, a mini blip, has him back in the race. Michael Cooper, much needed following a tough run at Plymouth. First in the league since October 10th. Joel Dixon, only his second of the season at Barrow. Scott Davis, having a great season and back to keeping it clean after shipping 8 in 2. Richard O'Donnell, big clean sheet and a big win for Bradford. Luke McGee, quietly going about his business at Forest Green. James McKeown, back in the game at Grimsby. And last but not least, Vaclav Hladký. There he is again.
Yes, there he is again. Expertly done, Richard.
Thank you. Well, now it's for me to throw back to you for the clean sheet league table.
Yes, clean sheet league table. As you said there, Freddie Woodman, normal service has been resumed. He is still out on top with 11 clean sheets in 19 games. Alex Palmer, he is second with 10 clean sheets. Then you have Scott Davies, Vaclav Hladký and Asmir Begovic, who's crept up into that top five, all with 9 clean sheets. As we said last time, Scott Davies is just above the other two because he has played just 15 games. Just below those three, Marcus Bettinelli, also on 9, but he's played 20 games. So that top five, Freddie Woodman, Alex Palmer, Scott Davies, Vaclav Hladký and Asmir Begovic.
Fantastic, Matthew.
Thank you, Richard.
It's been thoroughly enjoyable. Last one before Christmas.
Indeed, yes. The customary Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks on Thursdays won't be available for the next couple of weeks, Richard.
Of course, this week it would be Christmas Eve, next week New Year's Eve. So no, we are going to be doing next Monday, the following Monday, and then normal service will be resumed.
Yeah, we'll be throwing out some of the interviews as well that we have done in recent weeks. Robert Green, look out for that one. The extended Matt Murray and Rob Elliott versions will also be available for our free listeners. Like we said, we've got Mark Crosley coming out on Patreon. We've also got Alex Stepney, Richard, who we spoke to over the weekend. What a man.
Yeah, fantastic interview, which we had yesterday as of recording. And yeah, it was excellent. Of course, the European Cup winner 1968 with United. Incredible story from Tooting and Mitcham within 5 years to then winning the European Cup. And it was a fascinating conversation to see how goalkeeping has changed from his day to this day and to get a lot of his opinions as well as to how he sees goalkeeping now, the good and the not so good.
Yes, and remember, if you would like to get in touch with us, we are here. hello@goalkeepersunion.net, on Twitter @GKUnion, and our new brand spanking phone number 07503673020. Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
On behalf of Richard and I, we wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy Neue.
Oh, I love it. Very, very good.
Horrendous.
I haven't actually told you how I'm celebrating Christmas, Matthew. I've actually got some friends over. A goalkeeper you might have heard of. He was at Aston Villa last year. A guy called Pepe Reinders. I did invite another one over, Darren Rudolph, but he's busy, unfortunately.
On that note, I think we are going to call it a day, Richard. Perhaps call it a year. Wow, this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.
Away!